It's like Batman Begins.
Rub your chest. Your arms will take care of themselves.
It's a good analogy for this. If you take care of other people, then you will get taken care of. And this is the sickness of this Sigma male bullshit. Some of our best and brightest and most useful people are now opting out of society. I mean, if you're blaming your problems on everybody else or society at large or whatever it is, your options are to get past it and win anyways, or be a bitch.
Right.
Right. And that Sigma is just a bitch move, dude. I just don't understand that.
It is.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Travis Chappell, and I believe that if you can connect with the best, you can become the best. So after creating 800 podcast episodes about building your network, I've come to realize that networking is really just making friends, if you're doing it the right way anyway. Join me as I make friends with world-class athletes like Shaquille O'Neal, entertainers like Rob Dyrdek, authors like Dr. Nicole LaPera, former presidents like Vicente Fox, or even the occasional FBI hostage negotiator, billionaire real estate mogul, or polarizing political figure. So if you want to make more friends that help you become a better version of yourself, then subscribe to the show and keep on listening, because this is Travis Makes Friends. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the show. Today, I'm making friends with Dan Holloway. Dan is someone who I connected with very recently. He actually asked me to come on his show, Citizen, and then while I was in Austin doing that show, also asked me to come on his other show that he co-hosts called the Drinking Bros podcast, which is actually a pretty popular show. It's been around for a really long time. And he was the former VP of marketing at Black Rifle Coffee. And so the Drinking Bros podcast started inside of the Black Rifle Coffee company's kind of culture. And then it split off into a separate show. And then Black Rifle kind of did its own thing. And so Dan kind of kept with the Drinking Bros podcast, which is now a really popular show. And now he has his own show that he hosts by himself called Citizen, which is more about a little bit more serious educational type show about what it means to be a true citizen, how to add value to the world around you and things like that. So I was happy to join him on both of his shows. And then my next trip to Austin, I was like, I gotta get Dan on my show so we can chat about a few things as well. He's a former veteran, does a lot of work with the VA and veterans that are dealing with PTSD. He does a lot of work around veteran suicide, mental health awareness and things like that in that culture. He's a really big part of that world. Really enjoyed our conversation. We actually talked a little bit about that, about how to overcome mental health issues in that world, and what a lot of people are getting wrong about how to take care of veterans leaving that world behind them and things like that. So we talk a lot about those things. We also talk a lot about his company Hard AF Seltzer, which is a brand that has really been blowing up lately. It's all over the place. It's in a lot of different sports stadiums and things like that now. It was the first hard seltzer that was a higher alcohol percentage. And basically the way that he broke it down is he was like, look, I'm a big guy. It takes a lot to get me to be buzzing. So I'd drink a White Claw or whatever to try to be healthier. And then, I had to drink three of them to feel anything. So they came out with hard AF seltzer, and I believe it's 8% per can. And it actually tastes good. Because there's a couple other ones out there, like White Claw has one called White Claw Surge, but it is a massive difference in taste between the Surge and the regular White Claw. Hard AF kind of came in and filled that gap in the beverage market, and they are reaping the rewards from doing so. And he also, again, like I said earlier, happened to be the VP of marketing for a coffee company, which, you know, is a lot of similar distribution to a beverage company like Hard AF. So we talk a little about business, we talk a little about marketing, we talk a little bit about veterans and PTSD, and basically just how to be a better human. And Dan's all about self-improvement and becoming a better version of yourself, which is something that I can definitely get on board with. So please enjoy this conversation that I had with Dan Holloway.
Dan, what's up, dude?
I'm living the dream.
Yeah.
It's nice in Austin. It's middle of December and it's 70 degrees.
I was going to say it's actually a lot nicer than Vegas is right now.
Ridiculous.
I was like, yeah, I was not, I was expecting it to be okay, but yeah, I was walking around. I had to go change my shirt.
We live in kind of a bizarre world here, to be honest.
Yeah.
It'll get cold for like 2 days, 30, 40 degrees, and then 70.
You know, that's kind of nice though. January, February is the same way.
No, it gets rainy. I mean, it's been a little bit rainy lately, but yeah. It gets rainy and cold. Usually there's, every other year or so, there's a freeze, right?
Cause I heard last year was brutal.
Yeah, yeah. We're not really set up for that stuff here.
Yeah.
But what happens is it rains a lot, and then the water freezes on the trees and branches start falling down and stuff.
Yeah.
Could be worse, though.
It could be worse. Yeah. Vegas is like, nobody expects Vegas to get as cold as it does.
Well, it's the desert.
Right. Because
there's a lot of buildings there doesn't mean it was just a plain before.
Yeah, exactly. And for me, it was basically the same because I grew up in Lancaster, California, mm-hmm. which is still the Mojave Desert. It's like the same desert Vegas is in. So it's pretty much the same weather. But yeah, well, friends come visit in like February and they don't even bring a jacket. I'm like, well, that was a mistake. It's like, it's not going to snow on you, but it's like 33 cold, outside with wind chill. You know what I mean? Well, thanks for being here, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Came out here a month or two ago, did your guys' show, mm-hmm. Both shows. And then, we planned another trip and I was like, oh man, we gotta turn the mic to the other side of the table.
So. What else you got going on while you're here?
It was my wife's birthday.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. So basically she had a work event that's mm-hmm. going on the rest of this week. So we came out like 3 or 4 days early to hang out, party a little bit. We had a couple friends fly out with us, met us out here. So Austin's one of those places that we just kind of like keep a tab on because it's one of the places we've considered moving, you know? Mm-hmm. So any chance that we have to come out of it. It's like here, like Salt Lake area, and then Southern California. Mm-hmm. So there's always a piece of me that wants to go back.
You got
to
stay out of Salt Lake specifically.
Yes. Right? Yeah.
Because of North the inversion, but you like Cottonwood Heights and stuff. It's
correct.
Pretty nice.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Anywhere up towards Park City is also.
Yeah. I'm trying to stay away from like ground zero Mormon territory.
Well, it's not even the Mormons, man. It's in a surrounded valley basically. Right.
Yeah.
And it's quite a bit above sea level. So you get this very bizarre meteorological event called inversion, which is where like typically warm and cold fronts will come, a warm front will come over the top of let's say a plateau or something, or even like a valley or something, two mountains, and then space in between them, and as the air cools down, it drops, obviously, because that's how physics works, and it kind of has this effect of pushing out the stale air. Because Salt Lake City is kind of surrounded on all sides, the air just sits there, right? It has the worst air quality in the country, actually, Salt Lake City.
Is that true?
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. I would not
and
expect
it's not
that.
It's not because of pollution. It's because just kind of a naturally occurring phenomenon.
Wow.
So, yeah, I would stay out of there.
I would not expect that with how, like, outdoorsy and beautiful it is. Like, you wouldn't think air quality
Well, I mean,
and
every other direction. Salt Lake City, you can kind of see some stuff. But, yeah, like Moab is not far away. Yeah. Park City's not far away.
Yeah,
we were there when I was VP of marketing at Black Rifle the first year or so.
They're based out there, right? Black Rifle?
They're in San Antonio, yeah.
Okay.
But at the time, we were only in Salt Lake, and it was like, I was sick the whole time I was there.
Just like a noticeable difference.
Yeah, it sucked.
That's crazy.
But, you know, again, the surrounding area is pretty nice. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all four seasons, beautiful. Park City's 20 minutes, up the mountain. Best snowboarding ski. I mean, some of the best in basically the world.
Yeah.
So that's up there on the list. I've been in the desert my entire life, dude. So it's like, you know, the Mojave Desert, brown dirt, nothing really exciting about it. So,
I mean, it's pretty green here right now, but
yeah. And the leaves are changing right now.
Yeah,
like,
there's
some seasons to being here and you actually see some green shit every once in a while instead of all brown. So
yeah, I mean, you could probably check out Wisconsin too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It depends on what you're going to do, right?
Yeah.
In your life. Maybe when you retire, Wisconsin or West Virginia, if you really like to see green shit.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I like being somewhere where it's beautiful for now, but also like while I'm in building mode, I got to be able to be mobile.
Right.
So like that's like, it kind of limits it because I don't want to be next to an airport where I have to take a connector to get out of town.
That's why we moved here. Because we were in, Ross and I were in Wilmington, North Carolina for a little bit. And I mean, it's beautiful there, but same problem, right?
Can't
everything required one additional step and it was just getting old and expensive as well.
It discourages you from doing the things that you know you got to do.
Yeah.
You know, so like being in Vegas, that's probably the thing I'll miss the most about being in Las Vegas.
Well, they're cutting
flights
though,
right? How easy the
airport is. I've heard they're reducing some flights to certain places.
It has not affected me at all. So I can't speak to that, whether or not that's happening, but it wouldn't surprise me. But also, like, I've never had an issue.
That might just be a thing going on with the airlines in general.
Sure.
Right now.
Yeah. But yeah, I love just flying direct anywhere in the country, almost in the world. You can get internet. They have the international terminal there. And then it's 15 minutes from my house, you know?
Like, it's not bad. Would you live in North Vegas?
I live, so there's Summerlin, which is like, you know, northwest, and I'm about 10, 15 minutes south of Summerlin area called Spring Valley.
Yeah.
When I moved there, dude, it was like, there was nothing. It was just like, if you wanted to do anything besides get like takeout type food, mm-hmm. you had to go up to Summerlin or down over to Henderson or to the Strip or Town Square or something like that. But in literally, we moved into this house 2 years ago. Since we've moved in, it's like probably hundreds of, really billions of dollars mm-hmm. of real estate development has gone in. I was going to say hundreds of millions, but just Durango Casino by itself, multi-billion dollar project. Yeah. It's the Fertitta's newest station casino that they just put in. It's like 2 miles from my house.
Oh,
they're putting a Lifetime a mile from my house.
Well, that's nice because there's one there Durango. Now, right?
There's two there.
Okay,
they're packed.
Yeah, there's. I was a member of one of those for a while because my ex lived there.
Oh yeah,
it was. I mean, it's a great gem. Obviously,
they stopped accepting memberships.
Mm.
They literally were like, we're at capacity. We can't accept anymore.
Yeah, they have
a wait list right now.
They had one diamond and one platinum. The platinum one's bigger.
Yeah.
It's the one with like the outdoor swimming pools and all that shit.
Well, both of them are that way. Both of the Vegas ones have the outdoor swimming pools. They're structured a little bit differently. And one of them has like a rock climbing wall and whatever. Mm. And
yeah, that's the one we used to go to because they had childcare. So we'd take our kids there. And
that's honestly the core reason we still have a membership there because we pay a ridiculous amount of money to go to the gym.
Yeah.
But also they watch our kids for 2.5 hours a day.
Yeah.
So
I mean it's like
it's pretty nice.
The membership for the two of you plus your kids, that's probably what, like $400?
Yep. Almost exactly. Yeah. My mom is also on the account. So like we got away with it because she watches our kids for us. Mm. So like she's like a, you know, nanny or childcare or whatever that we can put on the account with us. So in total for the five of us, we pay like $550 a month or something like that. But yeah, the childcare thing makes it so worth it.
Yeah,
because,
yeah.
You can come drop them off, and like if you got to get work done, you can go sit in the cafe, mm-hmm. get some good food, and get work done. And somebody else watches your kids, and they actually do stuff with them. You know, they have tumbling classes.
Oh yeah, it's cool like, during the summer because they were like tumbling, they were rock climbing, they were swimming, they were doing all kinds
of stuff.
Exactly,
it's not just like you let them sit in a room.
Yeah, yeah. When I dropped her off and picked her up and stuff, there were probably like 60 kids there.
Yeah.
I mean, a bunch of kids. Her age, she was like, what, 6, 7 at the time?
Yep. Yeah, they do a lot of stuff with them, man.
During the summer.
Exactly. And like, especially in Vegas too, you know, because people want to come into town and then they're like, oh, let's go do the pools and whatever. And it's like, okay, well, we could go to Mandalay Bay. We could go to the beach.
Yeah.
But also, it's going to be like, if you want a cabana, which we're going to want a cabana, because if you don't, you're just in the 117 degree sun in a fucking chair and like can't get any break from the beating down of the sun. So it's like, you got to get a cabana. Well, like that for the day is like $900 just to rent it. No food, no beverages, just to have the cabana. Obviously can't bring outside food or beverages into the casino. They check it. They're running you through security, all this other stuff. And it's just like, it's objectively a worse day if we're going to go to Mandalay Bay. Or we could go to our gym that we get for free. We'll get you a guest pass and we'll get a cabana there for like $100.
Yeah,
we'll
it's not bad.
Really good food. There's a poolside bar. Mm. Like our kids can play right in front of us. It's not packed at all. It's like, it's a so much, like it's such a better experience. We'll spend like 8 hours there in the summertime, you know.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. But yeah, dude, what's been happening with you?
You know, just doing shows. I mean, so UFC was in town this week, and that's always nice.
I saw that. you guys went to the fights, huh?
Yeah. I don't remember any of them, right? I just don't.
Living the ethos of the drinking bros.
Yeah, no, I mean, we weren't that torched or anything. It was just talking to people the whole time.
Mm.
And I don't really follow UFC that much, to be honest.
Yeah.
Which is funny, because half my friends are fighters. But yeah, it's... it was a fun time. It was weird. It's the first time I think they've had an event like that at the Moody Center, the new Texas Longhorns basketball arena.
Oh, is that what it was?
It was pretty dope. It was like 17,000 people. I mean, that's good for a UFC fight.
No kidding.
It was a good crowd. I'm hoping they'll come back.
I'm sure they will. I'm sure they will.
Well, Joe lives here, so that helps.
I was going to say, yeah. Have being Rogan adjacent is like a real... Yeah.
That and all the, there's so many jiu-jitsu gems here now. Like, I think 6 of the top 10 highest ranked jiu-jitsu athletes in the world live here now or some shit. I don't know.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Would Vegas be another spot for that?
You would think so, yeah. I'm not sure anymore. Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of camps. There's like fight camps. I don't know about jiu-jitsu specifically, but there's some in Miami that are pretty big. Okay. And then or that surrounding area, like just north of Boca, I think, is where the Kilcliff Fight Club is. There's a bunch of dudes up there. Then there's the one that the Diaz brothers go to. I think it's some like Stockton, maybe. I don't know exactly where it is. But there's a bunch of dudes Northern that California. Go there too. Yeah. And then, yeah, the Vegas. A lot of the guys who can live in Vegas because they can, if you're under contract with UFC, you can work out at the Performance Institute over there in Summerlin, whatever you feel like it, which is super nice because it's a, I don't know if you've ever been there before. That place is dope.
Yeah. So that place is 2 to 3 minutes from my house and like where Durango Casino is, like all that new development that's going in.
It's super cool, man. I mean, they got like this huge hyperbaric chamber with cardio equipment in it and shit. It's
in the chamber?
Yes. Oh, I mean, it's like it's probably twice the size of this room.
Wow.
And it has treadmills and all kinds of stuff.
Wild.
And you can see under it too, the tank to suck all the air out. I don't remember. They told me it was like $15 million just to build that tank or something like that. Not that UFC gives a shit.
They're
printing money over there. But yeah, it's super dope. A lot of the guys do live there, or at least do their camps there because you have access to all that like free food and blah blah blah. Right.
Did you ever get into fighting?
No. Just with guns and war, you know?
Yeah.
Fist fighting just seemed like it would hurt my hands too much.
To me, it's would hurt my face too much.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure that's
more worried about my face than my hands. But I want to build a little bit of context, dude, for people listening who may not know who you are, what your story is. Let's go back in time. Let's say like 8-year-old Dan Holloway set the scene. You know, where were you? What's family life like? All that good stuff.
Well, family life wasn't great. My dad was kind of a dick.
Okay.
But I was, I played baseball a lot. That was kind of my thing back then.
Yeah, the outlet.
Yeah. I had a good time. I was a Braves fan because I grew up in South Carolina.
Okay.
And that was pretty nice. Well, not that young. When I was 8, that would have been, 89? They still kind of sucked, but... By 91, they were like in it every year for the next 16 years or so, or 14 years, I think.
Yeah.
So that was fun. Yeah. I played a lot of baseball. I was kind of a weird kid socially. Yeah. Kind of weird.
What did your parents do?
My dad he worked on cars.
Okay.
And my mom worked in like a textile mill or something. Very old school kind of job.
Was there any push toward like, hey, you got to go to college, or did they just not really care, or did they push you a certain direction, or
not really? No, okay. I mean, my dad wanted me to play baseball for sure.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, and I was pretty good, but I didn't care enough. You know, I mean, it's like anything else. I was talking to some of my buddies who were fighters, Mickey Gull, actually from UFC this weekend, about there's certain professions like so, you can skate by sometimes, right? You got a 9-to-5 filling out TPS reports. You can kind of phone it in there. If you're getting into something that requires like that level of discipline, you better fucking like doing it. Cause if there's any quit in your heart, you're going to quit. You know what I mean?
Right.
So guys that get into fighting who just want to be fighters, but they don't like fighting.
Yeah.
That sucks, dude. I probably wouldn't do that, but yeah, I loved baseball. I still do, but not enough. Like it didn't fulfill any kind of purpose in me. It was just something I enjoyed doing.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that at the time. You know what I mean? It was just something to do.
Yeah. But well, and at that age too, like you have such a small sampling of peers around you that you don't realize how not good you are.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like if you work at all at it, it's like you're the best on the team. And when you're the best on the team, you don't have any other context as to like how good other people your age are. That was my thing, dude. I played a lot of basketball. Mm-hmm. I was like, I thought I was pretty good.
Yeah.
And it's like, I was good for where I was, but if you zoom out and like put me next to other, you know, 15-year-olds, it's like, oh, that's an athlete. Yeah.
Well, I started getting invited when I was a freshman to major league tryout camps, right? Because they like to scout you ahead of time and stuff. So the Reds sent me letters every year, and I would just show up in their stuff, and I would go throw well, like I was a pitcher.
Okay,
I threw pretty hard. I think by my junior year, I threw 94. But one of our buddies, a family friend, was a former minor leaguer for the Pirates.
Okay.
And he would, I thought I was hot shit for some amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, everybody throws. It was kind of like Bull Durham. It was like, everybody throws hard up there, buddy. Like, that doesn't mean shit.
Right.
And you know, that was a good life lesson for me that kind of brought it into reality. It's like, all right, well, I'm going to have to work at this every day.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I just don't care enough to do that, you know?
Which is good clarity, you know, because some people do. Yeah. Some people do, and they'll win.
Oh, yeah. You have to. Well, I mean, like, I cared about other stuff. I liked learning things, right? Mm-hmm. I like to understand how things work. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. like a very analytical mind. So, you know, I just went to school a bunch.
Yeah.
Went to the Army for a while and did that shit, and then got out and went to school some more.
So you graduate high school and go directly into the Army? Or
No. I went to... oddly enough, I went to seminary first, not because I'm particularly religious.
That's right. I feel like we talked about that.
I just think that one of the better ways to study human beings is to study religion, because it's kind of an overlap of history and like man's attempt to justify their existence in the universe. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of getting the historical aspect, but you're also getting a very strong sociological and psychological treatise on humanity, right? That's why I always liked C.S. Lewis, reading his books. Again, not the fiction books. Well, one of the fiction books, but mostly, like, he wrote this book about watching his wife die of cancer. It's called A Grief Observed, and it's just his thoughts and feelings as it was going through that process. That was really interesting. Then he wrote this other book called The Screwtape Letters. That's it's basically the communique between this demon in hell named Screwtape and his nephew on earth. And he's writing to him to teach him how to trick human beings into being bad people, basically, right? But it's just it's a treatise on human psychology, right? It's very brilliant the way he wrote it. So I got into that first, and then
did you grow up religious at all?
Yeah, I guess my family was.
Okay.
I'm not sure how I felt about that, but you know, never really cared that much about it, to be honest. It was something to do, but...
And then all of a sudden cared a lot about it?
Well, I cared about parts of it.
Yeah.
Right, what I could learn from it.
Sure.
And, you know, as I got older, I guess that changed a little bit. I'm still not very religious, but it is... I do think that the Jesus character is very interesting, right? Like, if you're going to model undeniably your life after someone, that's probably not the worst guy to choose, frankly. For a lot of reasons, like, skip the platitudes and bullshit that you hear from, you know, microwave religion or pop culture religion, whatever you want to call it, and cut down to this dude who held a very strict standard morally, but also was very kind to people who needed it at the time. I think that's a pretty good combination of stuff that anybody can recreate, right? So I guess, you know, these days, not that I really think about it that much, but I guess you could say a lot of people like myself are kind of this cultural Christian that Jordan Peterson talks about sometimes, because he's not like really repent or else, like sinners in the hands of an angry God guy. But he does do these lectures on even the Old Testament, right?
Yeah.
I think they're really interesting. But anyways.
His lectures. You're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. The allegorical perspective of like a literary work and what it means for your daily life.
Yeah, I think those are pretty nice. And then, you know, after I finished that, it was like, all right, well, this isn't very practical.
Nobody's paying me for this.
Yeah. So I got a degree in computer networking security. Okay. Now, while I was in seminaries when 9/11 happened, and I decided I was going to go into the military then, but I needed to finish what I was doing first.
Gotcha.
And so I got a degree in computer networking security after that, and then I joined the Army, and that was 2005.
Did you join the Army with the intent to do something with like the what you just took away from your degree, or was it like
I just felt like those are good things to know, right?
I mean,
like understanding how humans think in our history, and then understanding how tech works. Like good things to know.
Both will probably serve you in life, ultimately.
Yeah. Not that I've ever really used them professionally specifically, but, you know, those are pretty,
I mean,
those are good skills.
Arguably, though, human psychology you use every day.
Sure,
You know. Yeah. How was your experience in the Army?
It was good. I was in the 82nd Airborne as an infantryman. So, you know, I had the benefit of being surrounded by extremely competent people. I think a lot of folks, you know, get into look, bad leadership anywhere, from your family to a business to anywhere, right, can be a problem. Mm. But when the stakes are life or death, it can be a real problem, mm-hmm. you know? And we were fortunate enough to have pretty good leaders. Some of our officers were knuckleheads, but our NCOs were great. So, yeah, it was a good experience, I guess. You know, nothing prepares you for it.
Yeah.
For the psychological stress, I guess, of being turned on all the time.
Mm.
And then, you know, while you're there, it's fine. But when you get back to reality, it's like, all right, well, I got to learn how to be a person again.
Is that like just a constant process? Is there like a beginning and end to that, I guess? Or is it just constant?
I mean, is there a beginning and end to hunger or thirst?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, your brain transforms to some degree, I think. So no, I don't think there's a beginning or an end. Well, there's a beginning, but I don't think there's an end to that.
Yeah.
But you know, just like anything else, you learn coping mechanisms. And this happens before you experience any sort of trauma at all when you're a kid, right? Like you learn how to manage your temper. You learn how like to manage your impulse in general. Like impulse control is a big thing.
Yeah.
That, you know, stress with young kids, especially when they're still developing. I don't think it's any different than that, to be honest. It's just something that needs to get done. But we have treated it incorrectly, especially for male veterans. Unfortunately, and it comes from a good place, but there's this, and it's pervasive in culture now. It's not just with military veterans, but we have this impulse now to coddle people, right?
Mm-hmm.
When they're going through a difficult time. And that's generally speaking, for a man, that's not the right solution, right? Because we are defined in many ways by the purpose we have in our life. And when you clip the wings there, it becomes a problem. You shame spiral. You think you're useless.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you don't want to be a dick, obviously. So like the pull yourself up by your bootstraps or get your shit together. That's not.
Yeah. Like just saying, just shouting, be a man.
Yeah. No, that's stupid. Yeah. But it's like, hey, people are counting on you. You got to be strong. And there's only one way to get strong, and that's to go lift the weight, whatever right. it happens to be, whether it's an actual weight or the burden in your life.
Sure.
Because that's the secret to life. The weight doesn't get lighter, you get stronger, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if you don't get stronger, then the weight gets heavier because you deteriorate.
Right.
See, I think we've done a great disservice to veterans in this country in that regard. A lot of money, it's not a funding issue. A lot of money's been spent on this.
Yeah.
It's just bad science. Mm-hmm. Like why would you? I think about it like, and I don't want to be too reductive, but I think of it like a toddler. They fall down and you react, so they react. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But resilience is contagious. You know, Andrew Jackson said that one man with courage makes a majority, right?
Mm.
And it's kind of the inverse of the bystander effect, where, you know, a bunch of people are standing around, something bad happens, and nobody wants to act because they all think somebody else is going to, or they're ashamed or whatever, so they avert their eyes to the event that's going on. And the inverse of that is when somebody does step up and take charge or act like a leader, then other people will do the same, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's another thing that we like to say is, in the absence of leadership, you lead as a man. That's your job, right? And I tell people that a lot, Dave, because I get questions from, you know, listeners and fans and stuff. Like, hey, there are no leaders in my community that I can look up to. I'm like, well, you become one. That's your job, right? And that is the path that we should have laid out for these guys.
Yeah.
You know, because there's some level of
like you're crippling them by telling them
right.
about, like, by talking about this problem all the time with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's what Jonathan Haidt and Greg Lukianoff are talking about in Coddling of the American Mind. It's just reverse cognitive behavioral therapy.
Yeah.
You're teaching people to prioritize their trauma, right? Which invariably leads to a victim culture. It has to,
sure,
right?
Sure.
Because then you get into an arms race over who's the most victimized.
Right.
Instead of just saying like, all right, that happened. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like you can be a victim or you can be somebody that stuff has happened to you, which is every human being that's ever existed, right?
Literally.
So I think for men especially, I can't speak to women that much because I don't know what it's like to be one or go through that shit. But I know for as a man, it's nice to get a pat on the back and a thank you sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, we made the mistake of taking off the uniform and thinking our service was done, right? And I think it was, I think it put us in a position far worse than the general public. The general public male, a lot of issues, right? 40% less testosterone than their counterpart 20 years ago. That's a fucked up thing.
But 40%?
40%, yeah.
Jesus Christ.
So the average 21-year-old today has the same testosterone levels as like a 65-year-old did in 2000, give or take. For a variety of reasons, environmental stuff and whatever, but like microplastics and shit like that and heavy metals. But, you know, that kid who has been told to some degree, whether directly or indirectly, that masculinity is somehow intrinsically bad, or that the patriarchy is bad, or that, you know, the exercise of strength is intrinsically bad, right? Or whiteness is bad, or whatever these crazy things people say. You mix that with the hormonal issues, and you have a kid who has the biological imperative to provide and protect and to use aggression to do that, right? Because that's how we're designed. Now all that aggression is frowned upon publicly, so it's turned inward. And we know what that is. That's depression, right? Violence turned inward, or anger turned inward is depression. So we have this slew of depressed kids. Now you map that on to the veteran. It's somebody who has had the ultimate purpose very clearly defined, right? And something that is a part of their identity.
Yeah.
Then be taken away, right? It's different to never have experienced it, but it's one thing to have that, have it be a critical part of your identity, and then have that plus your community taken away from you, right?
Yeah, plus the community. Both of those are...
And our response to that was like, oh, it's going to be okay, buddy. Those words ring hollow. And that's why dudes, not 22 a day, but more like 40 a day, kill themselves, right?
Wow.
Three Rangers over the weekend actually killed themselves. It's like...
Three Rangers.
Yeah. Yeah. from Third Bat, yeah. It's like, oh, it seems so obvious that that's the wrong answer to me. These guys need a purpose, just like anybody else, right?
Right.
I mean, again, I hate to be reductive about it, but like an Australian Shepherd that isn't on the job, they are panicked and neurotic and don't know what to do with themselves.
Right.
Right. Now map that onto a highly intelligent dude who knows how to do things.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's like, all right, well, I'm fucking useless.
Yeah.
And then you tell him, oh, it's okay. It's okay to be useless. He knows that's not true.
Right.
Right. So what do when everything is fucked and everybody's lying to you, you know?
Right.
It's easy to spiral like that. I'll say that.
Yeah. No kidding. What do you think is like a better solution?
Well, one, identifying that problem first, because sunlight's the best disinfectant, right?
Hmm.
Understanding the parameters, the left and right limits of life like that will start to change your decision-making. I don't know if you saw it, but Shia LaBeouf was on Real Ones with John the other day.
I didn't see that.
And he was talking about how much better of a person and husband and father he is now, right? And here's what he said. Before, my life was about being happy. My goal in life was to be happy, right? And that means that every action I took was self-serving. It had no real purpose, I mean, except for just this generalized idea of happiness, which is, you know, that's how you become addicted to things.
Yeah.
Chasing the dragon, as they call it, right? And he said at some point he realized that his function, his purpose needed to be useful, right?
Yeah.
To be useful, to be present for his wife and his children or child. I think he's only got one, but, and whomever else in his life, right? So, you know, usually when, particularly psychologically, defining the problem usually unveils what the answer to that problem is, right? So the problem is that I have no purpose and I'm biologically wired to have purpose, and that's what it's going to fulfill me, then I need to go find it in whatever way I can. And it's not going to be the same for everybody. I mean, some people find it through service, like the military or police or first responders or community service or whatever it is. Some people find it in business, creating jobs, mentoring people, stuff like that. Some people find it in their family. I mean, and then to some degree, all of those things, right, for some folks.
Sure.
But that's the goal, right, is to refocus this person back onto purpose. Now, it's more difficult these days because purpose requires some sort of desired end state, right? So it's like my purpose as a father is to make sure I have healthy, well-adjusted, protected kids who are now ready for the world or something like that, right?
Sure.
That's just one example. These days where all of the, beginning in adolescence, we don't have rites of passage anymore unless you're Jewish and you have a bar mitzvah. But for a young man, there are no more rites of passage anymore in society. So it starts off pretty early being a problem. But even into adulthood, and this is something that's probably true for women as well, these time hacks through life where it's hard to know if you're doing good at life sometimes, right? But knowing that I've graduated or I've got the job that I want, I'm on the right track for my career, or I've started my family or I've bought my first house or whatever it is, these things are very off-center these days. A lot of them are pushed to the right year-wise by quite a bit, like 10 years in a lot of cases.
Well, I was reading somewhere recently that the most common living arrangement for men under 35 currently is with their parents. The most common.
Yeah, that's not great.
It's,
and there's a lot of societal factors for that,
seems
right?
Backwards for sure.
I mean, inflation's rough, housing market's rough.
Yes.
There's a lot of societal factors for that. Yeah, but I think
college degree.
Yeah.
Debt that comes with that, the lack of jobs outside after you graduate that you thought you were going to get.
It's daunting, I'm sure. I was fortunate enough to have all my education paid for by the military, including my master's degree, so it was pretty nice. But yeah, it's like all of these things that used to be the infrastructure of American life or Western life in general are now kind of different, and we haven't adjusted to that yet.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I don't know if we're doing it on purpose, but it feels like we are, but we're delaying maturity a lot.
Yeah.
I think that people mature at the rate that they are required to mature.
Correct. Right? Yeah.
And I don't think you do them any favors by delaying that. I think that a man should be a man by 16, right? Like you should, if things go wrong and something happens with your family, you should not like you're going to go get a $100,000 a year job. It's not what I mean, but you should be of sound mind, making good decisions with your eye on the future, right? At 16, you can't be still fucking around on video games, thinking that it's all going to be okay until you're 22, and then you'll figure out what you're going to do,
right?
Not like people will say that's like, oh, don't put so much pressure on them. Why? Pressure makes diamonds, bitch.
Right.
Like, what are you talking about? What kind of soft ass society do you want to live in? That doesn't make any sense to me. People will mature as they are required to. Like I've seen half the sergeants in the army are 22 years old, right? 22. That's They're out wild. There and they've got 3 or 6 or sometimes 12 dudes following them into combat.
Yeah.
You're telling me that 22-year-old can't make the good decisions elsewhere? Of course they can.
Right.
We just don't require them to. People will rise to the level of requirement. Mm-hmm. And that's part of it too. You know, when you coddle people who are going through this psychological distress, they get comfortable in that period. And that is unacceptable. It can't happen like that. It should be uncomfortable to be in psychological distress. It should be uncomfortable to be in a job you don't like or a relationship you don't like or not in a relationship that you want to be in or whatever, right? Like that discomfort is what's supposed to make you go do these things.
Correct.
And everybody's talking about all the gurus are talking about, you know, manufacturing discomfort for yourself. And it isn't rocket surgery, man. Just like do the thing, whatever it is. That's why I love Chris Williamson. He just always says that. Just do the thing. Whatever it is, just go do the thing.
Right. Thinking about doing the thing isn't doing the thing.
Right.
Planning to do the thing isn't doing the thing. Yeah.
Just go do it. Yeah. I mean, take so in troop leading procedures, one of the things we use to build operations in the military, the first thing you do after you get a generalized plan is called start necessary movement, right? Mm-hmm. So I get a warning order and then I start my necessary movement. Like, hey, we got to go take this hill. We'll get you details on the way. All right, I'm just going to go start doing stuff. An implicit act, right? And something about that investment, I think, one, it's traction, right? Yep. I'm sure you know about that. Like getting that stone rolling at first is a big thing. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, you can, some of these things that cause us problems sometimes, like spent cost fallacy, for example, you can leverage that too, right? Like invest yourself into something so you feel compelled to do it more.
Sure.
That's not a bad thing, you know?
Right.
So you have to get people's, you have to rearrange this dude's mind from it's okay to feel this way.
Yeah.
And it's like, you shouldn't, it's not bad to feel that way intrinsically, right? But it is harmful to you to feel that way. You should try to get out of that.
Sure.
So to feel like, to pat somebody in the back who goes, you know what, you've been through a lot. It's okay that you're feeling this way. Fuck that shit.
Yeah.
That is unacceptable, but that's how we treat people,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I think as much as anything, it's responsible for the suicide crisis.
Hmm. It's ridiculous. I didn't, like, being outside of the military, you know, you hear the stories or whatever, but when you put it in the context of like this many people per day, it's like, well, clearly something's not working. Like the way that we're doing it is not serving people the way that it should be.
Well, it's becoming pervasive in civilian culture as well.
Hmm.
Actually, let me back up a little bit. So the greatest percentage rises in suicide in the military are active duty, not veteran, and non-deployed, people that have never deployed to a foreign country, right? That's the fastest growing group of suicidal people.
Wow.
Now, in civilian life, the fastest growing group is one that has historically been somewhat insulated from this, and that's young girls, like teenage girls, used to be far less likely to commit suicide or even attempt suicide than their peers. And that's no longer the case. It's the fastest growing group to do that shit. It's like, well, we got to figure out why that is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We're in a death cult now,
right?
Where people think it's okay to check out. And, you know, I mean, I've been in those situations mentally where things are rough. And you're like, well, you know, if you don't see light at the end of the tunnel, a lot of people just want to turn the light out entirely. And not that I would recommend that, obviously, but I understand it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you can't, like, telling someone who's feeling like that everything's going to be okay, you, like, that's nothing. You've done and said nothing. If anything, you've made it worse, right? Like, the Carl Sagan used to say that for me, it's far better to grasp the universe as it is rather than persist in delusion, no matter how gratifying the delusion is, right? Mm. People know when somebody's full of shit. People know when the situation's full of shit. They know when they're full of shit themselves.
Yeah.
And you have to cut through that. You have to just, like, be very direct, like, hey, this shit's fucked up and it's going to stay fucked up unless you do something. You're the only one that can control this.
Hmm.
You can't control all the circumstances. Maybe you lose your job. Maybe the relationship doesn't work out. What you can control is your attitude and your effort, right? That nobody can take those two things away from you ever, right? So that's the weapon. Those are the two weapons in your tool belt that you're able to fucking use. And you can use those weapons to build new weapons, right? Like contacts or intelligence or whatever else.
Skill set.
Yeah. But it's on you to do it. Mm. Like, we thought we were being kind to people by telling them it was okay to feel bad.
Yeah.
But that's not true. It's like what Machiavelli said, if you're kind when you're supposed to be cruel, you'd be forced to be cruel when you're supposed to be kind, right? And that's where we have arrived in society now. And it's why homelessness is on the rise, suicide, just the, you know, societal decay in general.
Sure.
Is because it isn't cruel to hold people to a standard. You're doing them a favor, right?
Yeah.
This is why we teach children.
It's hard because it comes from a good place.
Sure.
It comes from we just want you to, we want you to be happy. We
toxic
want you to
empathy,
feel good.
I think it's called. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. And then it just is detrimental.
Because
like I said, you need it. You need to be held to a higher standard.
I mean, you wouldn't do that in any other thing, right? You wouldn't tell, like, if you were, maybe in T-ball or some shit, but if you're a professional athlete, and a guy's performing poorly at something, you wouldn't just tell him it's okay.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? That's
yeah.
crazy. Nobody even thinks that way.
Right.
But you'll do that in your daily life where the stakes aren't win or losing a game, but your actual fucking life.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I don't know. It's just we approach things very oddly. And then, you know, I think there's some level of there's a lot of pressure in society to not seem unkind to people,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
even though most people are unkind generally
sure.
these days.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, Musk was talking about it the other day on that CNBC thing. It was like, all I see are people that are pretending to do good.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Or just saying they're doing good, but they never actually do any good. Fuck those people.
Exactly. Right? They're worried more about perception than reality. Yeah. I want to get a little bit back into the story now. So you graduate, get a degree, mm-hmm. then go to the army, then get out of the army, and mm-hmm. then you said you would just went back straight into learning.
So I worked in, I did a couple of things. I worked in politics a little bit.
Okay.
In Wisconsin during the recall elections up there, the Act 10 union busting, as they called it, stuff. and started working in private security, doing like risk management, things like that.
Okay.
Not long after that, moved to Oakland. And yeah, I started working for this company where I did like, site surveys or workplace violence. Like if there was some issue in the workplace, my team would go in to secure that. And then, you know, we would have psychologists interview people, or if it was a mass layoff or something like that. And then, you know, it was interesting for a while, but not really doing anything.
Yeah.
It got pretty boring pretty quick. But I was finishing a degree, and I finished a master's degree in Homeland Security while I was there. And then in, 2015, I think I went to work for Homeland Security for, FDNS. It's Fraud Detection and National Security. It's a wing of the, of USCIS, so Immigration.
Okay.
That investigates. Some of it is, well, a large portion of it is just immigration fraud generally, but we're looking for criminal activity, right?
Okay.
Like fake documents or terrorist threats and stuff like that. I did that for a year. We kept sending up cases to ICE for prosecution, and they were just like, yeah, we can't prosecute this because it was the Obama administration, and they were kind of weird about that stuff. So I was like, well, this is dumb.
Yeah, it feels useless.
Get the fuck out of here.
It's like,
yeah.
I'm just...
yeah, so I applied for an intel spot at another agency, hopefully one that would do stuff. And right after I got accepted, my buddy Jared Taylor from Black Rifle Coffee, he's one of the founders. He was actually my JTAC back in the day. So JTAC is, not sure if you're familiar with that. He's the guy attached to my infantry unit that calls in airstrikes.
Okay.
Right. So for in troops of contact, he gets on the phone with F-16s or A-18s and they just fuck shit up. Right. He called me. He's like, hey, you should just come work for us. I'm like, I don't know shit about coffee, dude.
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, but you're doing like data analysis and intelligence. That's just marketing. I'm like, all right, we'll see. And true. It turned out he was right.
Yeah, human psychology as well is just is marketing.
Yeah, so went there. That was early 2017.
And to be a marketer or to be
I kind of tooled around in the marketing department for about 3 or 4 months.
What was the size of Black Rifle at that time? It was still a fairly young company.
Yeah, I think 13 or 16 employees, somewhere in that range.
Yeah,
it's pretty small. Did that for a while, and then, you know, got promoted a couple of times to this presidential board where we were just restructuring the entire company. And after that became VP of marketing for a while. So I kind of the digital marketing team.
Okay.
We had a content side and the digital marketing team. I kind of ran that side of the shop for a couple of years until we outgrew my knowledge, right? Which is, you know, in a startup is if you're on the ground level, you should be trying to work yourself out of your own job.
Yeah.
Like, I want to get this successful enough where I'm not confident enough to run this division anymore.
Sure. The people that get you here won't get you.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Like, we got to, I mean... You know, to our credit, I think we got the company up to like 85 or so, 83 million in revenue before we outgrew our own bullshit.
Yeah.
But then we had to bring in professionals.
Sure.
And at that point, it was like, we were already doing the show, Drinker Bros, as like kind of an internal marketing device.
Okay.
But the path to go public had begun, right? To IPO. And we really couldn't have our EVP and our CEO talking about buttholes three times a week. You know what I mean? It just looks bad for the
optics
SEC.
Are not great. Yeah.
So Ross and I and Jared just kind of bought the other two dudes out, Matt and Evan, out of the show. We took the show and they took Black Rifle. Well, Jared kind of bounced back and forth between the two, but because nobody expects him to act like an adult, which is nice. That's why I love him so much.
So spend some time with Black Rifle. And then basically as that's gearing up and you're kind of, you know, feeling like your skill set's not as valuable there anymore, Drinking Bros is doing well enough at that point. So just,
well, I mean, I kind of turned it into a business. So I took what I knew from booking ads for Black Rifle on through like iHeart and a bunch of other media networks and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, I can just talk to these same people and book guests on or book ads on our show too. And just turn it into an actual business. It shouldn't be very difficult. And it wasn't. It took like 3 months maybe.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. So you had some decent viewership already at the time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was, yeah. Pretty good.
Yeah. Nice. So then that became full-time within that period.
Yeah. That's all I've done since. I mean, we own Hard AF Seltzer Booze Company. We started about, I don't know, a year and a half ago, something like that.
Okay.
But yeah, the primary job is the media network. And we now have a bunch of different shows on the network too.
Yeah, what are some of those shows?
Let's see, The Operator with Rob O'Neill. Ross and his wife have a show called Ross Patterson Revolution. I have a show called Citizen, which you've been on. And then Drinker Bros is the flagship. We have two different sports shows. We're getting ready to bring on a UFC show.
Oh, great.
And a wrestling show, probably. We're working on that. And we have a couple of history shows as well.
Okay. Nice.
So it's kind of all over the place.
Nice. You guys have like what's the goal? Is this just like, we just want to keep developing shows? Do you have a kind of a plan to?
Well, right now, I mean, it's using the audience that we've built already to promote our own product.
Sure.
Right.
With the seltzer company.
Yeah. Which is nice because it kind of dovetails with Drinker Bros. It's an 8% seltzer.
That is hard AF.
Yeah. The reason we started is because we were going, you know, it was around 2019 or so, and we were going to more and more college football games, especially because of the show. We did a college football show. And, you know, it was just around the time when most major universities were putting booze sales in college football stadiums for the first time. A lot of them don't, and a lot of places still don't. I think Michigan just got it this year, actually. But we were drinking, you know, I'm not a big beer guy. It just makes you full all the time, but we're getting after it. You know what I mean? And they didn't sell hard liquor either, which probably wouldn't have been a good idea anyways, but it was all seltzers back then.
Yeah.
But they're all 4%. And I'm a big dude. I'm like 230 pounds or so.
Yeah, I drank 80,
like 100 of those. So what we were doing was we were just like getting airline bottles of vodka and pouring it into the top of that thing. Power Claw, they called it, I believe.
The Power Claw.
Yeah, it's like, well, let's just make our own. That's 8%. It was challenging. It took us a year to dial the flavors.
I was going to say, that is not an easy process.
No.
That industry, that sector is not easy to get into.
Especially the 8% market. I mean, there's not any other good ones. There was Bud Light Platinum and White Claw Surge. And they taste like shit. I mean, it's like cough syrup.
It is a crazy difference.
Yeah.
It's like an additional 3.5% or something from regular White Claw, but the taste is like,
it's horrible.
It's not the greatest.
Yeah. So, you know, we figured it out with testing how to make it taste good.
Yeah.
And it costs a little bit more, but not enough, to be honest. I mean, it wasn't that much more.
Sure. Sure. And then you went to market year and a half ago?
Yeah. About a year and a half ago.
Okay. How's that been going?
It's good. Yeah. We bootstrapped the whole thing. Now we're kind of looking at investments and stuff like that because, again, we're growing out of our own depth at this point pretty rapidly.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll hire some operations people soon that know the BEV industry.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, it's been going really well. Keeping up with it is difficult. It's aging me rapidly, I think. What are you going to do?
That's you're going to get somebody else to come in and
exactly,
do all of it. Yeah. Well, that's the nice thing about running the media company, though, is like if you can build a media company that's good enough to not only like have you enjoy what you do every day, but also actually pay you enough money to take care of all of your immediate needs while you're building an audience of people, then yes, like the initial next move is like, well, now we can take a little bit of a risk here because everything's already taken care of. We got some money in the bank. Now we can go start our own brand that goes directly in with what our audience, our core demographic already wants or needs. And then distribution is a lot easier at that point.
It like is.
You don't have to spend as much money on marketing when you already have the built-in distribution engine of the audience that's there watching.
We don't actually spend any money on marketing except for we do some partnerships with sports franchises just because part of the deal gets the booze into their place, right?
So the Marlins
and the Tampa Bay Rays last year we sponsored. And that puts the product in the arena or in the stadium, which is nice. But I wouldn't pay for like a commercial or anything like that.
Yeah.
Because I don't need to, you know.
Right.
I mean, we sell out everywhere already. So we haven't reached that. There will be a point where we get there for sure, but it's not there yet. It's been slow because we bootstrapped. It's been slow.
Mm-hmm.
The growth has been good, but the scope growth has not been great, or not huge, because we're paying for everything ourselves, right?
Sure. So, fair.
Like we just opened, our biggest market is Texas. We opened there Friday, I think, or here rather Friday.
Oh, wow.
So we haven't even opened here yet.
Wow.
And then California will probably be next.
That's wild.
And that's our second biggest market. So we're just barely tapping the service here. So yeah, it's all
good. That's awesome, man.
It's fun. Yeah, but to your point, I think it's a lot of businesses start podcasts. A lot of people who are professionals, like real estate or attorneys and things like that, or people that work in the fitness community or something like that, they'll start shows just because it's kind of a hip thing to do. Mm-hmm. You need a podcast now. But there should be some intent behind it. Like you should be... It's no different than building an email list, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're capturing an audience so you can talk to them.
Right.
And, you know, there's a lot of tricks that people use. I don't like any of them because I want you the purpose of having an email list or an audience for a show or something like that is now a lukewarm to warm lead.
Yes.
Right. Like, and to do that, you have to provide that person value. They have to enjoy being there.
Yes.
You want them to have opted into it.
Mm-hmm.
Like they showed up here for me. And then two, give them a product that they enjoy. Now you should be very authentic. You should be exactly who you are because people can sniff out bullshit.
Yep.
If you are a reasonable, decent human being and have something to say, plenty of people will come listen to it or interact with it, whatever it happens to be, if it's an app or something like that. But do that. Be yourself, because eventually people will figure out
exactly.
Shit
and it's hard to be someone else.
Yeah,
that's the thing I love about podcasting, though, versus any other channel. Mm. It's like you can fake Instagram posts, you can fake 30-second TikTok videos, you can pretend to be somebody else on your little cool dance with your wife or whatever. But like, if you're doing hour plus conversations on a podcast, like you will come out at some point. So you may as well just be that person from the beginning, because you do 500 episodes. It's like, well, at some point they're going to figure out that you're just a fraud.
And yeah.
That's the opposite of the reason to start the show.
Yeah.
Just to build trust with an audience.
Yeah. I think we're at, for the main show Drinker Bros, I think we're at 1600 now.
Damn.
Yeah. And I've got two.
It's quite a few.
Yeah. Yeah. And then if you include sports, we're well over 2000. I don't remember, to be honest.
Wow.
But yeah, it's like, you know, everything gets revealed over time. Yeah, and you have to be, you know, there's other things at play there. Like you have to know yourself if you can handle the criticism or not. And if you can't, don't watch it. Don't look at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I know people who won't read I read the comments because I'm looking for one funny comment.
Yeah, sure.
Like I just like it. But you know, reasonable feedback I like. Or if like I've said something that seemed confusing, now I know. If one person found it confusing, a bunch of people probably did, so now I can clarify later.
Sure, sure.
But mostly what I'm looking for is people talking super funny shit about me.
Yeah.
Because I think that's funny. Like if somebody really roasted me good, I always comment and thank them for their comment because I just think it's funny. Like I You can't take that shit too seriously. But no. If you are the kind of person who does take it too seriously, don't read that stuff.
Yeah.
Because people from fake accounts will talk shit to you.
Right.
And exactly. If you reply to them, they'll just keep, they have nothing to do. So it's not really useful to engage in that.
Right. That's that damaged 22-year-old with no purpose. Yeah.
The Sigma male.
Yeah.
That's the dumbest shit going on in society right now. This guy that thinks, like, girls were mean to me in high school, so now women have no value.
Right. Exactly.
It's like, oh, dude, you're the loser who took their ball and went home.
Yeah, exactly.
Because somebody hurt your feelings. Like, you're not going to make it in life.
The Sigma male. I like that better.
It's the dumbest shit.
The people who pretend to be alpha.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're black-pilled. Like, oh,
totally.
I'm not going to participate in society anymore because my feelings got hurt. Like, okay, buddy. You sound like a fucking pussy, to be honest.
Right. Like, yeah. Well, it's literally the opposite of what they're trying to pretend to be. Unfortunately, they're like grabbing the attention of a lot of these kids because they also feel that same way. And then that's why I like people like you and people like Rogan, people like who are giving young men the correct path, which is like, yeah, sometimes shit sucks, but also you can't just blame everybody and become this like alpha douchebag. Which is, by the way, opposite of being an alpha.
Yeah.
You know, like, by definition, you're not an alpha because you're a douchebag. Yeah. And you're like you said, you're soft.
I mean, if you're blaming your problems on everybody else.
Yes.
Well, even if it's true, even if there is some particular group of people or society at large or whatever it is that's causing you that problem, your options are to get past it and win anyways. Or be a bitch.
Right.
Right. And that Sigma is just a bitch move, dude. I just don't understand that.
It is.
I mean, I guess I do understand it, but based on, you know, how society's progressed the last 20 years, but I don't understand it from a personal standpoint. Like, did nobody ever tell you, like, when you were 7 or 8 years old and you started playing Little League and you got mad because of something and you just like, I want to quit now. Did your dad let you quit or was even there?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Because that's what you're doing now. And it's, people talk a lot of shit. I've had this conversation 10 times in the past couple of months. People talk a lot of shit about Gen Z, but that's like a chef talking shit about his own pizza. Like, we made that motherfucker, you know what I mean?
Sure, sure.
We are responsible for all of that because for a variety of reasons. And to some degree, the boomers are responsible for all the stupid shit that we did, you know, like the latchkey thing.
Yeah.
Thinking that stuff, I guess, or keeping up with the Joneses or whatever it happened to be, was more important than time was a mistake for our generation.
Yeah, stuff is greater than experience is not true.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, it's just not true. And that's, that was a big problem for our generation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for us, it was kind of fell asleep at the wheel a little bit because things got comfortable. But a lot of it was the coddling. It's like, I get it, man. It is uncomfortable to watch the people you care about most suffer.
Sure.
Right? But there is some relationship between overcoming suffering and being a more resilient person down the road.
Yeah.
There's a relationship between effort and outcome that has been lost because we are worried about the effects the effort has on the person, right? Which seems fucking stupid,
right,
to be honest. But again, it's like, comes from a good place. You don't want to watch your kids suffer.
That's
the worst
part.
They fall down
man.
And cry and shit. Like, you don't want to see that.
That's the worst part.
Like, how do you handle that?
Yeah, I mean, as a parent, dude, that's like one of the most difficult things, especially with my daughter, but really with both of my kids, though. It's just like, you watch them just get super frustrated trying to figure something out, or like, they start losing their mind, lose their temper. They get insanely frustrated. They want to give up on it or whatever. And it would be so easy just to jump in and be like, well, let me do that for you.
Right.
And even a lot of times justified. But at the end of the day, it's not my job to make your life really comfortable and take care of all of your problems for you.
Yeah.
It's my job to teach you how to solve your own problems. So it's got to be one of the most difficult things when you see the struggle on their face, you see the frustration, and you know that you can immediately take it away.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I wonder if there isn't some utility, even The purpose of training isn't always to get things right. You know what I mean? Sometimes
Correct.
It's to learn stuff. And I wonder if there isn't some utility to going to sleep with an unsolved problem from time to time as a yeah. child, like, and then letting that create a natural drive. Like, I need to get this
done. To go
done,
figure right? it out again.
You know what yeah. I mean? Because we're in this digital age now where I can solve problems a little too quickly. Mm-hmm. I can get stuff ordered to my house a little too quickly with not enough effort.
Yep.
I can figure out the answer to a question without having to do the work
yeah.
to understand the context of it. So now we have, 38% of Americans are either diabetic or in pre-diabetes. And we have people with their knowledge base, their epistemology, their historical context is extremely shallow. So they take hard positions on things that they have no fucking clue about, mm-hmm. right? And, some of that is because there's societal pressure to just have a hard opinion on everything for some reason.
Did
you ask your plumber what he thought about
exactly.
Israel? Like, what the fuck do I care what he thinks? Why would he even care about Israel? He's not exactly. Jewish. Care about that shit.
You get pressured into having an opinion on things that yeah. you shouldn't even have an opinion on because you don't know anything about it.
Right. So it's like, I don't know what the solution to that is, to be honest. One solution is, as an individual, it's okay to not know things. Everything that you know now, you didn't know all the way up until the point that you knew it. It didn't make you a bad person for it.
Right.
Right. And that is the same for every human being that's ever existed. The smartest people you know, every now and again, there is some novel invention or mm-hmm. some novel thought. But for the most part, we're still, every time we have a crisis of culture in the West, we go back to the Stoics every single time. Mm-hmm. It's happened like 5 times in the last 1,000 years.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, do you remember this? So there was this guy, Seneca. Have you heard of
yeah.
him? Like, yeah, fucker, I've heard of him.
Yeah.
It's like the
Epictetus had some good things to
yeah.
say.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like Western civilization is been going for some time now, right? It didn't start with, the Reformation, or it didn't start with the Industrial Revolution. This shit's been going on for a long time, the thought process anyways.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't reach back into that for context. We reach back into it for sound bites. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And look, that's not a bad place to start. Having an ethos is not a bad place to start. And we do that with businesses. We have a mission statement. Mm-hmm. So, at Black Rifle, our mission statement was, we serve coffee and culture to people who love America, right? Very succinct, but also, I think poignant. Like, you as an employee of the company, particularly in the media department, everything I do should reflect that purpose, right?
Yes.
So it's good to have that for your own life.
The North
right?
Star, yeah.
Yeah. Whatever it happens to be, whether it's your religion or some other ethos, and to be able to distill it into a very short thing is good. But if your understanding is only that sentence and you don't have, the context to truly understand what it means, in this case, like, what does it mean to love America, right?
Yeah, sure.
Because, some people say being critical of America is unpatriotic. And I would say that being like a firefighter putting out a house fire doesn't make him anti-house.
Right. Right.
That's a stupid way to think, right? So, preserve the things that are good and fix the things that aren't.
Mm-hmm.
That's a reasonable position to take. And it's a reasonable position to take about some of these foreign conflicts right now that people are super butthurt about. You know what I mean? It's like, apply some of your logic and don't let your emotions get in the way about this stuff. But you can only do that if the logic is reinforced by a real epistemology, a real data set, facts.
Correct.
Right? So we have so much ready and easy access to everything now. So our understanding and appreciation of those things are completely shallow.
Yeah.
Right? And it's that disconnect between effort and outcome, which I think you have to recreate. And when it comes to kids, we do so much backward stuff. Like I was just talking to the founder of Spartan Race about this yesterday, actually. We start teaching kids foreign languages when they're 16. Why?
It's
Why
the
not
dumbest
three?
Thing. It's the dumbest
right?
thing.
Like when their soft palate is developing, right, or their speech center is developing.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like the ability, some there are some languages that will become exponentially more difficult to learn as you get older, right, because your tongue doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So why aren't we flip-flopping that and teaching language courses from like first to third grade?
Like they do in Europe.
Like in every other fucking country.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, high school is something more akin to, or something closer to like some kind of civil service requirement to graduate, right?
Hmm.
Like, not the military or anything, but, you know, maybe, but like something that builds discipline and community structure. So maybe it's ROTC or something like that, or maybe you go to basic training or something when you're a junior in high school, but maybe it's going to a soup kitchen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it is going into a legislative office and understanding how the administration of like taking care of other people works, or going to a hospital and seeing how their administration works or something like that. Understanding the world around you and community, and that the most important thing to me is that understanding that everything meaningful you do in life will be in the service of other people, right? And kind of turn our attention away from the device and from the mirror and start looking to help other people.
Yeah.
Because that's what fulfills people in life. That's why we build all of this shit.
Well, and that's the difference too between chasing happiness and chasing meaning.
Sure.
You know, like what you're saying earlier about Shia LaBeouf. It's just, if you are always constantly thinking about your own happiness, it the milieu that you're acting through is one that is completely self-centered. Even if that's not your intention, your intention is like, oh, just baseline happiness. And it's like, well, inherently you have to think about you in that context. Whereas chasing meaning is probably a more worthy pursuit than chasing happiness.
Well, it definitely is.
Because it's something you have more control over.
Not just more worthy, but more effective. I mean, you know, the irony of that situation is that the more you chase personal happiness, the farther away it will get from you, right?
Yeah.
Because in the same way that you buy a bigger house thinking you're going to have more room and you just fill it with more shit, you know? Like your brain will adjust. If you become addicted to the chase of dopamine like that, then you will stay addicted to it for your entire life and you'll never truly be happy.
Right.
Whereas if you use that same motivation, even the same strategies, but directed out towards other people, then you are going to find a level of fulfillment that you didn't think was even possible before. You won't even think about the chase anymore. I mean, it was, I think Gandhi said, if you want to truly find yourself, lose yourself in the service of others. Mm-hmm. It sounds like a platitude, but that is the standard for humanity, right? Mm-hmm. Like the happy man is a man with a healthy family and a successful business or whatever, right? Or a good friend group or whatever it happens to be, right? And a happy woman is the same. She's someone who's using whatever intrinsic skills she has towards the betterment of people that she cares about, not herself.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like that Batman Begins. Remember when, this is actually a principle that you learn in some survival courses, where he's cold outside and he tells him to rub his chest and his arms will take care of himself, right? It's a good analogy for this. If you take care of other people, then you will get taken care of. And this is the sickness of this Sigma male bullshit. Some of our best and brightest and most useful people are now opting out of society, and we can't afford for that shit to happen. That's what I tell. Like, I criticize these dudes a lot, but deeper into the conversation, I'm like, look, I understand that shit's fucked up right now, but we can't afford to lose people like you. You know what I mean? Or if it's a woman, like, you can't just tune out of this and go buy cats, man. Like, our culture is going to disappear.
Yeah.
And I don't mean just Western culture in general, but like the cult, whatever culture it is that respects the most effective form of government that's ever existed, which is the nuclear family. You know what I mean? One that is strong at the bottom as it is at the top.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? No matter where you put that little unit, it is strong, and it also strengthens the other units around it, right?
Yes.
Like this isn't a judgment. If you don't want to have kids, don't, because people that don't want to have kids should not have kids.
Correct.
Right? Like, 100%. But don't convince yourself you don't because it's too difficult or whatever, right?
Yes.
Like, because on average, the vast majority of people are going to be happiest when they have that, right? Whether it's
statistically.
Yes. Whether it's, you know, adopted people or a surrogate family or whatever, but find it, right? Like, if you don't want to personally have kids, you know, make friends with people that do. Mm-hmm. Find a way to mentor other people.
Sure.
Right? Like, what kind of asshole discovers things and doesn't share it with other people?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You don't want to be that person, to be honest, because you're going to be just a shell at the end of your life.
Yeah, well, this idea that lack of responsibility is what leads to happiness.
Yeah,
is like the ultimate delusion where like you said, it's not, you don't want kids because you actually don't want kids. Mm. You've convinced yourself you don't want kids because you see your friend who just had kids and now they can't go out to the bar with you because they have to wake up at 5:30 a.m. because their kid's going to be up or whatever. Yeah. It's like, you see that and you're like, oh my gosh, I would not, like, no way. Like, I can't give up my Friday night at the bar or whatever.
It's
really? Like, you can't do that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because in 20 years from now, which one's going to be a higher value?
Yeah.
Having gone to the bar 20 years worth of Friday nights, or having a 20-year-old son that, you know what I'm saying? Like, that adds value, happiness, fulfillment, and a slew of other things to your life. And it's like, yeah, of course it's difficult.
Yeah.
Like, but that's the thing about life, man, is everything worth having is difficult to have. Mm-hmm. That's what makes it worth having. Even a marriage is difficult. It's difficult to be married. Like, marriage is hard, but it's also extremely rewarding in a lot of positive ways. You know, having kids, really hard. Starting a business, hard. All of these things are difficult. Doing a podcast and actually making it successful to get sponsors and, like, provide, all of those things are difficult. Every single one of them. But they're also extremely rewarding. They provide a ton of fulfillment. They provide purpose. They make you feel useful. You know, that it leads somewhere.
Mm.
It's not just responsibility for the sake of responsibility. It's just like, you can't just skirt all responsibility and expect to be the happiest person alive.
I mean, you'll be miserable.
Yeah.
To be honest. It's weird, man. It's like, some of the happier people I know are in bad situations. People would say that it's a bad situation.
Sure.
I guess, right? Like a younger single parent, for example.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's not ideal, but that woman's got purpose and you don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Like, she's making an impact.
Yeah. Like, your happiness comes in brief waves, and hers is physically in front of her all the time.
Yeah.
And if you don't think that makes a fucking difference, I promise you that it does.
Right.
Right. And it's, again, back to the veteran thing. When you lose that connection between your actions and fulfilling the purpose that you intended, right, it becomes extremely difficult just to keep moving forward, just to put one foot in front of the other. You know what I mean?
It was like, put one foot in front of the other toward what?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. If you're heading nowhere, that's where you're going to get.
Right.
You know? Like, I get it. Some people are like in their mid-20s to late-20s now, working in jobs, like working at a bar or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got to do that to make it, fucking do what you got to do, man. Don't ever let anybody tell you how to make your nut. But you don't want to keep doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, you got to find something that fulfills you. Not that we don't need bartenders. We certainly do.
Sure.
We need servers at restaurants and shit like that. But, you know, that lifestyle, the industry lifestyle, it's fine in your 20s, but you don't want to be,
probably good too, you know, it teaches you social skills, you know, you learn a lot about how the world works when you're in those types of settings. But yeah, when you're 44, you know, if you've been doing it for that whole time, there's probably something missing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, and then like, just, it seems like there's been a pretty abrupt shift towards trying to make easy money.
Oh, dude.
And there is no, like, every now and again, somebody gets It's like aspirational marketing from the lottery. Every now and again, somebody will win.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, fuck, I got a chance. Well, like, no, you don't.
It's the crypto markets.
Yeah.
It was 4X and then it's crypto and now it's AI. It's like everybody has that friend or five friends that like has been an expert at all three of those things in the last 4 years.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They're crypto investors and then they're, and that goes down. Then AI comes up. Now they're an AI expert and you buy an AI course. And
well, there's the odd person who does really well at it for one reason or another. Then there's this second group of people who are just fronting as experts and extracting wealth from people who are not experts.
Right? Exactly.
That's the self-help market in general. Right.
Right.
And then there's the rest of people who are just getting wealth extracted from them for the most part. And that's just kind of, it's like a pyramid scheme basically.
Oh, that's
But there, you know, there is money to be made there, right? Without extracting wealth just from other people. If you know how to use AI to help you with your current business, this is a problem. Mm-hmm. People see these things as ends in of themselves, and really they're just modalities, right? They're means to get other places. It's like a new type of car in your transportation industry. This is, if you go to business school, you'll learn this lesson, and it's the railroads, right? Mm-hmm. One of the primary lessons you learn in business school is about the failure of the railroads to realize what industry they were really in.
Mm-hmm.
They thought they were in the industry of transporting goods across country on the rail lines. They were really in the industry of moving stuff from one place to another, no matter what it was, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the smart move for the railway companies would have been to do the same thing they did in the 19th century when Eisenhower started the international highway system, right? Mm-hmm. Or interstate highway system, excuse me. And because it was partially privately funded as well.
Mm-hmm.
Get involved in that, invest in that, start buying fucking trucks, right? To backstop what you're doing, diversify a little bit. And they would still be a major business right now. There are 6 million truck drivers in America. 6 million. It's one of the largest professions that exists here in this country. As a matter of fact, it's the highest grossing profession for non-college educated men.
Wow.
Right?
Wow. I didn't know that.
I think the average salary is something like $86,000 a year.
Wow.
So it's like a huge industry that they were too myopic to understand. And I say that because there's a lot of fucking flippancy towards AI and other and I guess crypto technology. Mm-hmm. Forget about the coins, but the tech itself.
Sure. Blockchain.
There's a lot of conspiratorial, like, oh, AI is going to become Skynet, and fuck it, man. Who knows, dude?
Yeah.
Who knows? But like, it is just a tool. It's a modality. It's a way to.
Yeah.
It can be good or bad. You know.
Absolutely.
I think Michio Kaku is on the trail right now talking about that. I think he was on 60 Minutes this week talking about it. He came on our show about a couple months ago and talked about it as well. But it's like, how can I use this? First, you have to break it down to what it does exactly. What is it doing? It's batching processes and it's doing a lot faster than you can. It's also somewhat intelligent. So it can, you know, a robot will become less efficient over time because the wear and tear, right?
Mm.
Like your processes may get better, but that individual physical object is going to get worse because it deteriorates over time. It's just entropy, right?
Sure.
But AI gets better over time. It's going to become more and more efficient. It works like your brain does. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It could be good or bad. If it learns bad lessons, then you have to correct them. But
sure,
it could be very good if you're working in something where you're trying to analyze a bunch of stuff at once or segment stuff or whatever, like marketing, for example.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm trying to put people into psychographic groups based on the things they like and then tailor a message directly to them, AI is going to be able to do that like a human being never can.
Right.
So if you're running...
Literally never can, because they can't make the calculation that AI can make.
So if you're running like even a small business where it's a consumer package good of some sort, right? And you're trying to do even low-level advertising on a social media platform or Google search or something like that, if you can figure out how to make AI segment your audience better, you're going to spend less money on marketing. You're going to make more money. Not only that, because of the way these things work, you're going to create more firebrand customers who are then going to go tell other people, and you're going to get free marketing out of it as well.
Right.
So it's like, don't be afraid of this shit.
Right.
Just figure out how to use it for what you're doing.
Yes. Yeah, no, exactly. No, we use all of it. And I have crypto, you know, it's just you have the people who step in and do it for 30 minutes and they're like, all right, who wants to buy my stuff?
Yeah. I mean, well, okay, you can AI your wallet and it'll make you money every day.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you can set it to immediately buy and sell at certain things. Mm. Like if you're into that sort of stuff, I would get to know it pretty well before I did it. But you can set caps, you can set like triggers to automatically do this or that based on the market. You can do the same thing for the stock market, by the way.
Right.
It's not sexy.
Right.
It's like
Well, that's how you make real money.
Yeah.
Is to do things that aren't sexy.
Well, it's how you make passive income without having to pay too much attention to it.
Yeah.
You know,
sure.
Like selling or buying for a dollar and selling for $2. Right. That's what you're doing, right? So the point of all that is like there isn't get rich quick schemes, right? Those things don't exist. That's always a trap. But the methodology, usually there's some truth. Like any good lie, there's truth in there, right? Mm-hmm. So don't be afraid to unpack that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, getting rich quick is a fallacy. It just doesn't happen. But when it does happen, it gets blown all over the news,
and
it makes people think that it can happen for them.
Yeah,
you know. So, but it's like, well, just the idea that it was on the news should tell you something.
Yeah.
It was newsworthy. It's like, this is so crazy that this just happened, that this kid made this much money doing this thing in this period of time.
Yeah.
It's like, that's why it's on the news, because it's insane that it happened. Like, it's probably not going to happen for you.
Yeah.
Because the bottom line is the real way to make money is going to take a long time.
Yeah. It's just consistency, really. I mean,
over a long period of time.
Yeah. Having a good product and being consistent. You can.
With literally anything.
Yeah. You can map that onto everything else. Your health,
right?
Your relationships. It's always going to be the same.
People will always overestimate what can be done in 1 year and underestimate what can be done in 10 years.
Yep.
And 10 years is a lot harder to commit to and stay consistent over.
It is. Yeah. But it really isn't.
Yeah. But like, to me, it's like, what's the alternative?
Mm-hmm.
The alternative is just switching every 6 months and never do anything, and then always being broke and in poverty. Like, that's not a good option either.
People jump around a lot.
Yeah. Well, some of it's necessary, right? At the beginning, we got to kind of, you know, that's what I tell young people a lot if they ever ask me for advice. It's just like, just go get your hands in a lot of different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Learn things, experiment with things, work for that person, work for this person, listen to this podcast, listen to that, watch this, like get around, do a bunch of stuff, because you're more likely to stick with something for that 10 years if you actually give a shit about it.
You have to.
You know?
Right, yeah. Yeah. But it does help also to have a breadth of experience. I mean, being a polymath these days is probably the most important time to have ever been one. I mean, back in the day, they were just like statesmen.
We don't need that.
There were statesmen and inventors like Ben Franklin, right?
Sure.
He was a polymath. Thomas Jefferson to some degree, but Ben Franklin is a real good example because he was doing experiments and writing and serving his country and all this other stuff. But now you can like really do something with that kind of skill set.
Mm-hmm.
If you know a lot or a little, if you have a little about a lot these days, you can really turn that into something because there's so much interconnectivity between different markets and stuff.
It's also helpful as a podcast host.
Yeah, it helps. Yeah. Yeah. But then some of it is a feedback loop too, because I get like, I have to learn more stuff now, which is the only reason I really do it, to be honest. I mean, aside from it being my job, but the reason I actually enjoy doing it is because my knowledge center gets upgraded on a weekly basis. You know?
Yeah, dude. I've been saying that for a really long time, and I heard Chris Williamson say it on one of his podcasts recently, and I was like, "Yes, thank you." I've been like, that's one of the core reasons that I still have a podcast is that it's like my number one accountability partner to consistent learning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you know you got to put out an episode, you know that you will constantly be learning. You'll constantly you feel at all the obligation to do right by your audience, then you feel a necessity to have more knowledge about this topic if it's something that you're going to be talking about, and you have to go out, read something, like subscribe to the newsletters, read the top books, listen to the top experts, interview people who are really smart. You know, like it has been my number one accountability partner for consistently learning more and more and more over time, even if it never resulted in anything else. It was just that one reason was a good enough reason.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you never know if that thing's going to pop back up later, right?
Yeah.
Like I've learned a lot of useless shit, or at least it seemed so at the time. And I'm like, oh, okay, this now makes sense to me.
Right. Right.
Building context in the world these days can be difficult.
Sure.
And, you know, getting unfiltered opinions can be difficult. Everything had, for a very long time, was, and media was very manufactured, you know, very intense. And in legacy media that I guess nobody really watches it that much anymore, but like the cable news stuff and then network television, it's still like that. Obviously, everybody's risk averse and, you know, the message is tailored all the time. It's basically just politics at this point. But to your point from before, yeah, it's like longer form, unedited stuff is pretty fun.
Oh, dude.
You know what I mean? Because you can follow the journey of somebody from being wrong or ignorant about something into figuring out they are, and then maybe changing their opinion or modifying their opinion based on it. I think that's an important journey for folks, right?
Completely.
Like, people have this negative association with being ignorant or wrong about something for some reason. We don't treat, like, if somebody had never played baseball before and they picked up a bat and held it the wrong way, it'd be funny, right? But you wouldn't call them and you're a fucking idiot. What are you doing? Like, well, I've never held this thing before.
Exactly.
But we do that with information. Somebody that's never been exposed to something, or even to yourself, you'll do that. Like, oh, why didn't I know that? Now I feel like an idiot.
Right.
Or you're like ashamed to admit that you don't know something. Mm-hmm. Why?
Right.
Motherfucker, you didn't know everything up until the point you knew it. Just like every other human being in all of history.
We all have knowledge.
Yeah.
Just
learn it, bitch.
And the only way, the only way to not be in the dark about it is to ask about it and to learn about it. It's just like, it doesn't even make any sense as like a model for living to just keep your mouth shut.
It seems dangerous.
Questions. It's definitely dangerous, especially when it takes on the role of the person who pretends like they do know it, but they don't know it, and they're not willing to ask questions about it. It's like, that's when it really steps over, it crosses the line into dangerous.
And I think, I think to some degree, you know, you don't know, right? Even if it's just in the back of your head. And it's because your brain will protect you from that. It'll make you more resistant to learning what the reality is.
Yeah.
Like, look at these dudes who do fake martial arts, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And every time they match up with a real fighter, like an MMA fighter, and they just get the shit kicked out of them.
Yeah.
It's like, that is a very good analogy for what you're doing by refusing to understand the context of these things that are going on in your life or in whatever, in the broader world or whatever. It's like, keep pretending like you know what you're doing, but that shit's going to come get you.
Yeah. Sooner or later, you're going to get your face kicked in.
Yeah. Like, there's my friend went to this self-defense course, and they were trying to teach her like knife fighting or some shit. I'm like, that's not a thing, dude. Like, this isn't Jason Bourne, motherfucker. If somebody pulls a knife out, run away unless you have a gun. There's no, you're not winning a knife fight.
Right.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, he's just showing me some skills. I'm like, no, the skill is to turn around and run in the other fucking direction unless you've got a gun.
Faster you possibly can.
But like, that's an example where you're putting other people's lives at risk by doing dumb shit. But you do that, you know, especially as an adult. In your business or in your social life or whatever, you know, look, we all make mistakes, so don't fucking stay up at night about it or anything, but you know, don't portend to know things that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It is dangerous for you and it's dangerous for other people.
Gotcha.
And most importantly, it's dangerous for our collective epistemology.
Yes, correct.
Like, the set of facts that we all have agreed upon, up and down, math, that's now racist, I guess. like all this stuff that used to be, and you should always challenge authority. That's not what I mean. I don't mean to just accept what's in front of you, but we have to have a collective set of facts.
Right.
That we all agree upon. Otherwise, we just got to go to war.
Right.
That's just the way it is. So
there's no baseline to operate off of if we can't agree on something.
That's why, like, with all the weird, like, political and gender stuff that happens, people are like, oh, just live and let live. Let them do what they want. What does it matter to me? I'm like, yeah, I agree with that. If an adult wants to do some shit, let them do it. Fucking, I don't care. The fuck do I care? I do all sorts of weird shit myself. But I don't think it's a good idea to participate in other people's delusions like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because then it just becomes real reality for people. Like, well, I don't know how your audience feels about this, but when I see somebody with pronouns in their bio, I immediately move along. that person is not a serious person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Even if they're their actual pronouns, just the fact that they put them there.
Yeah. Like why?
Yeah.
Like fucking Doug.
Yeah.
With a beard. Like, all right, cool, dude. Like, I've known you since third grade. I know you're a dude. You can take that shit out of here. Like, why are you participating in this nonsense? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Let's not make it real.
Yeah. I mean,
but like you said, I'm very much in that boat where it's like, this is a free country.
Oh, yeah. Do what you want, dude.
Whatever you would like to do.
I love that shit.
But expecting everybody else to engage in what it is that you do and then being upset with them when they don't is
not just upset, but trying to like, snatch their career and life away,
and
you know what I mean,
and teach their kids that it's okay when their kids are like six and they don't even understand how to do multiplication, let alone like the intricacies of the human mind. Oh man, well listen, dude. I know we could probably just keep talking forever. I got one more question for you, just because this is a question I've asked probably I don't know 500 people at this point. I'm always interested to hear the answers to it. You know a lot of people, you know a lot of things. In your perspective, who you know or what you know, which of those two is the more important asset in life?
I would say what? Would say what?
Why?
Well, I mean, it was what I knew that got me into rooms with who I know. You know what I mean? Who you know can provide you surface level value, right? It can get you started, I guess, but you're not going to keep going without the what.
Yeah.
If you don't have substance, you know what I mean? It's like, well, if my buddy's the coach of the Yankees, maybe I can get a fucking shot, you know?
Yeah.
I can go play first base there for a while.
Yeah.
I'm going to get my shit lit up because I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like, I feel like, the why, and who you know is certainly important, yeah, but I think what's more important for that reason.
Fair enough. Dan, thanks for coming on the show, man. Appreciate you. Where can people go learn a little bit more about you?
All social, you can find me at Dan Holloway. It's H-O-L-L-A-W-A-Y because my ancestors came through Ellis Island and they got close. They were only one letter off, right?
Holloway.
Yeah. And then you can see our shows, Drinker Bros Podcast and my show, Citizen Podcast, pretty much everywhere.
Perfect. Sweet. Thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, man.
If you're checking out this episode, be sure to go check out Dan's show, Drinking Bros, and his other one, Citizen. You can also find me on both of those shows if you want to go check those ones out. Follow him on social and get some hard AF seltzer in your life if you haven't tried it out. Dan, thanks again, man. This was a lot of fun.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks for spending some time with me and my friends. If you want to be better friends with me, then head over to travischappell.com/team to subscribe to my free newsletter, Your Friend Travis, where I share what's on my mind about life, building a business, raising kids, being married, and anything else I would normally share with my close circle of friends. That's travischappell.com/team. And my biggest ask of you, since I'm sharing my friends with you, is to share this episode with a friend of yours that hasn't listened to the show yet. Then leave us a quick 5-star rating in Apple Podcasts and in Spotify. It would mean the world to us as it helps us make sure that this show continues to be more valuable to you. Thanks in advance, and I'll catch you on the next episode.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.